friends in life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. After a while, she's AV on the board, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, as she is every time she's in here. Raring to go with the sour in the morning, aren't you, AV?
Sorry?
Raring to go with the sour in the morning, bright-eyed?
Yes.
Yes? Well, anybody believes that, you know, that's okay.
Sort of.
Sort of. Kevin, how are you, bud?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I, on the other hand, am bright-eyed.
Well, that's because you already took the dog out?
And I'd be bushy-tailed, but that would be a rather large tail, so
yes.
We'll go there. Won't get into that. But other than to say the coffee's hot, some clothes are in the laundry or in the washer, and I am showered, shaved, and ready to rock.
We're a little like fishes out of water here since our Dunkin' Donuts is giving up on us here in the morning.
Well, I mean, one or the other of you has to just make homemade donuts, that's all.
It's not the donuts. We never got donuts. It was the coffee.
Well, you know what? That's makeable, too, and they have these really cool thermos thingies.
It's not makeable when both Matt Weber and AV are, like, within a minute of us getting here in time.
Well, since right now I don't have my full job, I've been cooking a lot, and actually vegan and healthy things, so if you guys want to hire me, I can cook some good stuff.
Well, I didn't hear anything in there that reminds me of good stuff, vegan and healthy things. Kevin, did you hear anything about good stuff in there?
No, I just heard, ruined perfectly good food.
Yeah.
Hey, you just haven't tried my brownie.
It took her
vegan brownie.
You should have seen it took her about 2 hours one day to make oatmeal because it was like this kind of vegetable or this fruit in there and that kind of fruit in there. It was okay. But
Had to harvest the oats, had to mill it, had to do all that stuff. Huh?
Had to grind it, you know, the big stone. That's a... Anyway,
well, you like it. You ate like 3 portions.
Well, that's pretty good.
SPV if you're talking oatmeal, I'm fine with that. Yeah, and we could go at least partially vegan. But you know, they really do. You know, Tom, if you're going to be waiting anyway, they have these real cool coffee maker thingies. You know, it's what they use actually in Dunkin' Donuts. So you know, it's doable.
Actually, Dunkin' Donuts got a whole new system over here now. Instead of the individual pots that they would brew individually, they now have these big, huge things, and they just pour it out of the bottom of them. It happened like 3 weeks ago before this all happened. So I don't know if it's working out for them. Anyway, S&P futures down 21.75. NASDAQ futures down 67. Just as a refresher, we were, what are we, Friday? Wednesday we were horrible. Yesterday we were at a big up day, so we are basically giving back 40% of yesterday's gain as of now. So, and we had that ridiculous employment claim number yesterday of 6.5 million, which Matt Weber went and got Rita Coolidge. We're at an all-time high. I don't think that was what the song was designed for, though, Kevin. But it hit a note, shall we say?
I don't even think, and that includes the numbers that will get released today. I don't think the numbers yet are pretty relevant. Give it another week or two, and then we'll have
a six and a half million.
A real better understanding of the carnage.
Well, those numbers are pretty current, the unemployment claims.
Yeah, but I get it.
Those were for a week ending March 28th. Now, the ones today, from what I understand, the operative date or the survey date for today's number is the 12th. So obviously the 12th is before when they told everybody to not go to work anymore, basically on the, I'm going to say the 20th, right, Kevin? It was a couple days after St. Patrick's Day, correct?
Something like that, yeah.
So,
And I know we were closing the school, about then, you know, just saying we're going to do everything virtual.
Well, I remember because Governor Pritzker was, no matter what happened, was not going to cancel his election. So anything he did was the day after, and I remember the election was on St. Patrick's Day, so all this stuff started to come down because the night before the bars were open. St. Patrick's Day, he closed all the bars and restaurants on St. Patrick's Day and pretty much told everybody to stay home on Friday, I believe. So, we're going to have Carl on today, and he's going to, of course, be real and totally about bad decisions because of no real no tests, no numbers, no data. So this thing you sent me yesterday, Kevin, was it's pretty interesting. You read fictional.
Is that the article that Lou cited?
Yeah.
I'll tweet it out at the break for the listeners.
Just as a prelim, I mentioned anybody who's ever read Red Storm Rising from Tom Clancy, one of his first ones.
Oh, I think so, but that would have been like the 1980s.
Oh yeah, a long time ago. And but I was mentioning yesterday a little bit about whenever you anticipate something bad actually happening, or something where essentially a bureaucracy has to actually do something. I might as well be harsh. That if you can anticipate the problem, a really good leader sends somebody over there to straighten the thing out, like before they actually have to do something. And I was saying that Roosevelt hired George Marshall essentially as the he never had the rank. Well, at some point he did, of general of the army, but he basically hired him as the guy here to go around and make sure that everything was all right, because a war was coming. And he spent really several years having this guy retire, that guy retire, this guy fired, this guy getting moved. And basically, and in Red Storm Rising, the Russians knew they were going to go to war, right? So they said, okay, what about all our generals? And they go, eh. Basically, so they get this, well, for whatever reason, this big bull-looking redheaded guy who was maybe a one-star general. But they said, this guy's the best tank commander we got, even though he's so far down the chain that he wouldn't find him if he didn't know. So they promote the guy. And he ends up for like the next 6 months, he had guys resign. The guys that didn't resign, he like executed. I'm not recommending that, by the way. Basically, in 6 months, he totally changed all the leadership, because there were a bunch of peacetime generals that essentially got promoted for political reasons and were basically useless.
And then, well, wasn't that the situation, back in the days of, you remember his name, Abraham Lincoln, when he was, he had to make it work with, General Grant, who was, nobody liked him. He was a drinker. He was, he was considered crass, unreliable, just not a team player, and all of that. And ultimately, it came down to Lincoln sticking with him because he fights back. He would fight. Everybody else would, discuss and capitulate and talk about why something won't work. And, Grant's attitude was, just get the hell out of the way. We can make this go, and I don't care who I offend.
Well, there was also the terms of generalship in those days was a little different than today, thank God. If you read a lot of the history of Civil War, I'm not an expert on it. Lou would be our man, probably. But so many people were dying in the camps. Every battle in the Civil War was incredibly brutal. It was probably, I'm going to say, it was as brutal a war was ever fought anywhere, worldwide.
Probably, because I don't think the weapons would necessarily kill you. They'd just maim you.
Yeah,
it slow.
The weapons would, if for those of you, it's not a Civil War lesson, but the bullets were soft lead. So if they hit you in the arm, they didn't just, like you see now in NCIS where somebody has a bullet wound, the bullet kind of pretty much goes straight through unless it hits a bone or something, especially if it's steel jacketed. Well, those were designed, the entry level would be the size of, I'm going to say, a little marble. The exit level would be the size of a hockey puck. So essentially if you hit the arm, blew your arm off. And so the brutality versus the medical attention was light years. And nobody really, these battles were just brutal, gruesome. There was the one place where the one small spot was at Antietam or someplace, where the bodies were stacked up so high that people were killing each other and just landing, and the next guy was fighting over the top of the body. It was bone chilling. Yet, so many people were dying in the camps. Lincoln's like, look, let's at least fight. We're dying anyway. Which is not really a decision you'd like to make as a president today, but for those times, I mean, it's sort of akin to, it almost reaches into this virus debate. I mean, you talk about the amount of people that are dying in China. Well, guess what? The care here, I mean, I don't just see this in the numbers. I honestly believe it. It's like the difference between when I had the measles in the 50s or 60s, mom took care of you, and you had chicken soup and a warm home. And virtually, I'm not going to say nobody never had a problem, Kevin, because I'll bet if you knew about it, there was always one or two kids out of 100 that had a problem with it. But basically, everybody went and got the measles or the chicken pox. And it wasn't the problem. Yet measles is one of the biggest killers in the Civil War camps, right? Because if you land in on a place where half the people have typhoid or no food or anything like that, measles is a serious problem, correct? So,
correct.
I mean, what I'm saying is, you read this thing that Kevin sent me yesterday, and of course I read it, which I should never do to stuff that Kevin sends me, or meet us. It's basically every single day.
No, I'm definitely tweeting it.
Yeah, every single day, starting with December 31st, these people between the WHO and our people here basically bleep this thing up. So here we are, we're April. April, I heard this morning, we're April. We still don't know whether we should tell people to wear masks or not. And we have no idea what to do with people that are recovered. Can they go outside? Can they not? I mean, how do we get here from, we're 5 months into this thing.
What the article does too is it documents all of the structural barriers that we built to actually getting anything done. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, who has final sign off. What do you have to do to get something approved? And it doesn't really, you know, we recognize too late the notion that sometimes you have to suspend rules that you may have designed for a good reason to actually make something happen. And, you know, I've talked about this a lot now, that these things you don't discover until you get hit with them in real time. You just can't. You can't. Sometimes you couldn't even imagine that such a thing would be the rule.
Kevin, how about if I read this? Let me read this one day, because I don't want to read this. Well, obviously, I'm going to read the whole thing. But the thing here that Kevin's talking about, and so am I, is when the emergency hit, the rules got stricter instead of more lax for testing for people to develop their own tests, which makes. I'll just look at, well, January 30th, the WHO declares
Keith Moon came back from the grave, so.
By the way, Kevin, before you dash, we gotta talk about Ed Farmer today, huh? Well, that's terrible. January 31st, I'll just read this as quick as I can. HHS, who's that? Head of, what is that? Homeland Security?
Health and Human Services.
Health and Human Secretary Alex Azar declared a public health emergency, which initiated a new requirement. Labs that wanted to conduct their own coronavirus tests must first obtain an emergency use authorization from the FDA. Now, here's another group that had to be brought into this, right? According to reporting from Reuters, the emergency declaration made it more difficult to expand testing outside the CDC. That's because the declaration required diagnostic tests developed by individual labs, such as those at hospitals and universities, to undergo greater scrutiny than in non-emergencies. Greater scrutiny than in non-emergencies, presumably because the stakes are higher. Paradoxically, it increased regulations in diagnostics while it created an easier pathway for vaccines and antivirals. So the vaccines got helped, the antivirals got helped, but the testing got hurt. So Dr. Amesh, whatever his name is, a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins University for Health Security, there was a real follow-up with diagnostic tests that has exposed a flaw in the United States pandemic response plan. And that's the reason why, here we are in April, and we can't tell you, even simple stuff. AV and I were talking about this on the way in. They're kicking, they found people in the jail, Kevin, that have or there's people on this, at least the Army's gonna get tests. There's people in the jail, because there's people in the jail that test positive, they want to send, you know, 30% of the people out, they want to kick 30% of the people out. Well, Kevin, don't you want to test the 30% people you're kicking out? Don't you want to ask them where they're going? If you test them on the way out and they're positive, why not put them in the jail hospital until they're okay? If they are, if they're positive, first thing you ought to ask is, by the way, do you have a home? If you do, how many people live there? 25. Is that really what you want to do? Or if the guy has no home, then what do you do when he's positive? I mean, we're not testing anybody. What is, that's insane. 5 months into it. I just think, I mean, how do you not know? When, what are you doing? If somebody says, yeah, I'm positive, but by the way, I got a 1,000-square-foot apartment, I can just go home and sit there for 14 days. How many people in the jail have that? It can't be too many.
Okay, so the next thing to say is what you do, okay, you recognize this. Now you have to develop process on the fly. So you're saying, okay, we have to do something different. What are we going to do? And, you know, normally a good solid process is something that you would, you know, you would test, you would run some scenarios, you would, and you don't have time to do that. So now you're making decisions on the fly that are going to have substantial effect. And you just kind of hope it works, and you know, and you'll clean up the mess later. And it's not an easy way to operate. And again, I keep going back to, you know, my experience with this is when you're dealing with this crap in real time, it's just really, really difficult, and you have no idea it's going to be that way until it is that way.
Well, let me read just a little bit more here. This was the moment when the wheels came off. So this is January 31st. The moment when the wheels came off. Keith Jerome, the lab director of the University of Washington Virology Lab in Seattle, told the New Yorker how perverse this heightened standard was from a public health perspective. From the point of view of the academic labs, we looked at it like where there's any run-of-the-mill virus that people are used to, they trust us to make a test. When there's a big emergency and we feel like we really should do something, it gets harder. It gets a little frustrating. We've got a lot of scientists and doctors and laboratory personnel who are incredibly good at making assays, which is a test, right? What we're not so good at is figuring out all the forms and working with the bureaucracy of the federal government. So they actually turned all these guys off for the tests because it was an emergency. So they actually had less people working in an emergency than you would normally.
Yeah, and there's probably, my guess is that somebody, somewhere, said, you know what, when we get an emergency, we don't want everybody flying off the handle and saying, try this, because sometimes that may be worse than the disease itself. It's the same kind of criticism Trump got when he started talking about how promising whatever the malaria treatment was. So, you know, you get the idea that you don't want somebody just flying off the handle and saying, here, do this, or here, try this, because then you get the really goofy people who try it as a home remedy and wind up killing themselves. So that's probably the thought process behind it. It's the only semi-rational thought thinking you could apply to this. But the reality of it is that it gets in the way.
What we are
in the way of the professional people, you know, trying to work quickly, and these are systematic problems that we have, and it almost supports the idea of trying to push things to states, because maybe you can maybe at some point you can get some things done with less bureaucracy and fewer impediments, and then let that roll out back to the rest of the country.
Yeah, you're still not going to get
it. I don't know that that's the cure or not. I don't know if that's the right thing to do or not either. What I do know is that, you know, we're stuck in a situation where we didn't really understand the implications of policies and procedures that were designed, and all they've done is get in the way.
Well, did you, on top of it, just what they're intending to not have happen, of course, happens. Did you read what I was saying last night about the Hasidic doctor in upstate New York? He's the guy who's...
This sounds like an opening line to a joke.
Yeah, well, he's the guy who put together the, whatever, the malaria drug plus the erythromycin plus something else, the three-drug cocktail that he claims was working on everybody. Now, the guy's in upstate New York out in the country, so he's got maybe, if he's got 10 cases, I would be surprised. So he lobs out this tweet. The tweet gets picked up by everybody, right? This is when this all started about these three drugs. Trump, of course, hears it because now it's on every news show. And this guy, they're calling this guy, and he's walking around in his blue jeans. And, yeah, whatever. You couldn't write fiction like this. And it turns out that the guy has, like, no... I mean, I'm not saying if something works, you know, that's, it's fine, let it rip. But the guy has zero testing. Even his own, the own Hasidic doctors are going, what are you listening to this guy for? He doesn't have any kind of real testing here. It might have worked on a couple people that were, getting better anyway. Or it may actually work, but you can't just take his word for it and put it on national TV. I mean, you don't need that happening either.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a nightmare. And, you know, we talk about all the things that we may or may not learn walking away with this. You know, I first of all, I don't know if there's anybody out there who could pull it off, but the idea that we really do have to take a systematic look at all kinds of government and all kinds of activities and procedures and policies, it needs a review. And, you know, to me, this, I don't care if it's a 20-year process, something needs to be launched, and I don't know how you keep the politicians' hands out of it once it's launched, but somebody, you know, we really have to do better. It's too expensive in so many ways to operate the way we have been operating, and if we haven't exposed that much out of the last, you know, out of 2020, then we're just screwed.
Well, Kevin, why do you say, you know, challenge you a little bit, why do you say 2020? I mean, I'll just rattle off three things that I know of and recently in my lifetime. I mean, I don't think, well, George Bush was just in office, right, taking over from Clinton. I don't think either one of them could possibly know or deserve the idea that towers came down and the Pentagon got hit because on somebody's desk is an FBI report that a bunch of idiots were taking very odd plane lessons on how to fly essentially a commercial airliner and didn't care about whether they learned how to land or not. And yet it made it up to somebody's desk, and what'd the guy do? Leave it on the left side of the desk and then move it to the right side? I mean, nobody I think it was Katrina Bush's watch? It was it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I would never, I'm not a, I happen to like the guy. I don't know if he was a very good president. Do you think that George Bush was responsible for some absolute moron in New Orleans seeing that the dike in one area was leaking and not even going out and looking at it? I mean, do you think Mayor Daley, I think he was in mayor when they had the hole in the Chicago, the Chicago tunnel system that the guy whacked in the river?
Leaking from the river. The underground flood, the flood nobody could see.
And the thing sat there for 4 months on somebody's desk, maybe we should fix this thing, and they never did? I mean, I don't see how this bureaucracy needs to be shaken up, and I don't know how you do it. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, every single time we seem like there's some sort of a national crisis, what do these people do all day? I mean, they're not ready for it. I mean, they're not ready for it at all, and yet they all got to, I mean, you know, when I, Nancy, was it Elizabeth Warren, and Pelosi went along with it, when they hired the 15,000 people for, you know, was it the consumer fraud group or something in Washington?
Consumer protection.
Well, for the first 6 months, what'd they do? Develop procedures, order desks, order computers, and now there's 15,000 people sitting there with all these procedures. Yet whatever they were supposed to do for banks, I'm not saying you shouldn't protect consumers, obviously you should. Wasn't that the Comptroller of the Currency's job or the Federal Reserve job or FSIC's job? I mean, now all these guys, now what do they all do? Look at the other person and see if they're done or not? I mean, you see when the Board of Trade had that issue 5-6 years ago, I forget what it was, some fiasco, they had, the SEC was in the door, FINRA was in the door, the CFTC was in the door, NFA was in the door, FBI was in the door. They're all duplicating each other's stuff, Kevin. I mean, no wonder it's a go.
Warned about Madoff?
Yeah, I mean, of course, nobody paid attention to that. Although some of that was the people who were involved with Madoff. That was a hedge fund the hedge fund is not regulated. That's why you need to be a sophisticated investor to get into one. So the people who signed something not wanting to be regulated, then were pissed off it wasn't regulated. Right? And all those people ended up getting paid, SIPC, and PTI has to pay more SIPC than we used to pay for people who were in a hedge fund, and then all of a sudden the politics was we have to pay these people. Why? They were in a hedge fund. They shouldn't have paid a dime.
It's all your fault, Tom.
Yeah, it's all our fault. Because the stuff we do, you're not a hedge fund, and everybody watches us. I mean, this whole, when you see this happen on a weekly, monthly basis, Kevin, it's not surprising to me that at the end of the day, we don't do anything properly. I mean, I don't understand why. Because the people are there. What do they do all day?
Yeah, lack of confidence is probably the best argument you have for small government.
Well, and
it's just the sheer inability to do anything well. And you know, I don't know. You know, maybe we run a pretty good. I'm sure we run a pretty good army, even though there are some inefficiencies in there. So you know, maybe it's not fair to say we do nothing well. You know, we certainly are good at dropping bombs pretty well, and you know, those kinds of things. Hooray for us, by the way.
Yeah.
but you know, this idea that, you know, we hate the way it works and the solution is more government.
Right.
Is just nonsense.
Well, but
it's not rational.
But look at your take the CTA for instance, Kevin. Get on a bus anywhere, get on a train anywhere. The person you see with their fanny in the seat in the bus, male, female, black, white, blue, they're 99% do their job properly, very polite. Somehow they put up with the traffic and do exactly what you want them to do in a way where you wonder how they do it. And I take a bus once in a while, and I'm stunned by how competent everybody is and how pleasant they all are, and you name it. And yet you work your way up the chain, and there's this huge bureaucracy where this contract's this way and this contract's that way, and somebody's screwing this guy, and this guy's overpaid, this guy never shows up for work. At some level, when it becomes this bureaucratic, I think the people on the bottom do fine most of the time, don't you?
You know what? I had a friend who worked in the Corp Counsel's office. He worked there when our buddy Bob did, and his observation is: there's only one thing worse than the government lackeys. It's the government lackeys' bosses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know
the idea. It isn't the people who have the task of doing. It's the people who have the task of designing and overseeing.
Well, when you look at the Justice Department under Reagan, now we only have a couple seconds here. We'll worry about it after a break. SP Futures not down 20. That's not good. NASDAQ Futures down 65. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. We have Sir Kevin O'Neill with us. SP Futures down 19. NASDAQ Futures down 61. And I'm reading about this Luckin Coffee debacle yesterday. Kevin, did you spot this at all?
Did not.
Here's an outfit that's from China right now. We can't wait to list these things. I was stunned when what's Jack Ma's operation? Baidu is on the the New York Stock Exchange floor, and no voting rights on the stock. You have a right to an income stream out of Bermuda. Jack Ma owns all the hard assets of the place. Now he just retired. Anyway, this Luckin Coffee's now, it's not in New York, it's on the NASDAQ. Of course, the NASDAQ owns the New York now, so not there's that much difference there, which is also total lunacy on top of everything else. By the way, you know the guy who's the president of that is the husband of the blonde lady who sold all the stock. She's the richest person in the Senate.
The blonde lady who sold all the stock.
Who's the blonde? The senator. What's her name? She's from Georgia. She was appointed in Jeff Sessions' seat by the governor.
Oh well, no. Then she's not from Georgia because Sessions is from Alabama.
Whatever.
And his seat all got decided anyway.
Does it matter? Alabama, Georgia. I mean, you know, whatever. I know it's harsh, but.
Yeah, let's definitely generalize about Southerners. Georgia's with Atlanta there is rather different than most southern cities. Anyway,
she claims that somehow or another her blind trust guy got wind of selling $7.5 million worth of stock the minute she walked out of a meeting on the virus. Not too blind. Anyway,
hey, coincidence. I believe in coincidence.
Yeah, no kidding. You're obviously not.
Hillary Clinton's whole life is a series of oddball coincidences. So, you know, why wouldn't I, if I believe her, why wouldn't I believe it?
Your man Jethro Gibbs does not believe in coincidences, but you know who did was Curly. Curly and the Three Stooges. I'm a victim of circumstance. Just saying. Anyway, this company has only been public since May. And to add insult to injury, in January, here we are only 1st of April, they sold $4.8 million of stock in a secondary at $42 a share. So now the guy admitted after they sold this stuff in January that the entire 2019, Chief Operating Officer of Luckin Coffee, the largest domestic coffee chain in China, is accused by his own company of fabricating much of the reported sales in 2019. How do you fabricate coffee sales? You see how many people are in the damn place. Should be, out of all the things you should be able to somehow guess is how many sales Starbucks is having. You see the storage, you see how full, anyway. So the stock's down like 70% yesterday. Kevin, you couldn't, I mean, I don't even want to go there. How did this place ever get listed? How did they, you know, I'll just leave it at that. I'm just hoping I'm glad none of my people had it. I don't think anybody at PTI had any, but that doesn't make it easy because those people had it someplace. Anyway, S&P futures down 18, NASDAQ futures down 57, Dow down 215 over in Europe. We've got if I can get the Europe thing, the DAX down 41.4%, which is kind of a quiet day. FTSE down 75, 1.4%. That's a real move. CAC around down 44, it's 1% over in Asia. Got the Nikkei up a buck, call that flat. Shanghai down 16.6%, Hang Seng down 44.2%. Bonds, 0.58, right where they were yesterday. Bund minus 0.44, where they were yesterday. Japan breaks to the plus side. Kevin Gillis, 0.003. How's that for plus?
Hey, rocking and rolling. How do I send my money there?
Oil up $1.17, 26.49. So we're up $6 in that $20 low. Is somehow Trump said that Saudi Arabia and Russia are going to make nice and we might get together with them on a deal. As the day wore on, people felt that whole story was BS, but oil's up some. Brent up 271, 32.65, natural gas 156. RBOP back to 70 cents, up 5 cents, up from 58 cents. And we've got gold. Let me see where gold is, because gold is a special place in my heart. Down 650, 1631, though, back into the mid-1600s. Silver down 6 cents, 1458. AV, finally, what do you got for us, traffic and weather?
Good morning, friends. It is 46 degrees currently in Chicago. A few peaks of the sun expected today with temperatures in the 60s away from the lake, around 57 by the lake. The lowest of the day is 41, and we expecting showers overnight and slightly cooler conditions Saturday and Sunday. Stormy conditions are possible Monday and Tuesday after dark. Sunny day in Phoenix, high around 85 and the low 58, as always. Clear skies and sunny. In traffic, we have big delays on Den Ryan outbound in the express lanes approaching the Skyway, Chicago Skyway, where a multi-vehicle crash still blocks the two right lanes. Slowdown starts at 63rd. Use the local lanes instead to avoid traffic. And other than that, clear traffic, no delays.
Chief. Sports are our beloved Ed Farmer.
Sports are canceled for now.
Sports are canceled, but I don't think anybody. Well, I guess he said he wasn't looking too good at spring training, but I didn't dig into the causes. I'm going to miss him, Kevin. I liked him.
Yeah, he was good. I don't know a lot of detail about Ed Farmer's story, but I know him to be a story of persistence. I don't remember if it was an injury or what it was that knocked him down, but after having a career, you know, enough years in the major leagues to call it a career, he wound up having to go back to the minor leagues for like 3 years and reinvent himself, and then came back and was very, very successful with the White Sox as a relief pitcher, and played, you know, quite, what did he play, about another 4 or 5 years with them, and then maybe a couple more in Texas. And, you know, I think those kinds of stories are pretty inspiring, of people who got totally knocked down, and all of a sudden he's back. And, I just think that's a terrific story, and one that should be told as part of the story and as we discuss his demise.
Well, Kevin, as you and I have talked, neither one of us, although to be perfectly blunt, Kevin was a hell of a lot better softball player than I ever was. I'm not so sure you ever could have pitched as well as I did. You know, I don't think you were a pitcher.
No. I was such a bad pitcher that my teammates wouldn't let me throw batting practice.
Oh, well, so I had a little bit of a skill.
On the other hand, I could hit the all fields with power.
Yeah, but there's no comparison on the hitting side. I got pretty good, but you were one of the best. Anyway, when you play as much as Kevin and I have had on an amateur level, and you realize that you see how there are people that just have a skill set, you know, the Ernie Bankses of the world, those kinds of people. They're just bigger, faster, stronger, and more coordinated than just anybody else. When they hit the ball, it sounds just different than when and then there's other people who have obviously more talent. We probably have played with people, Kevin, that if their head was screwed on straight, would not have been an Ernie Banks, but could have been a major league player at some level. I mean, a Larry Boa type, those kinds of guys where you beat yourself up enough and mentally you're tough enough to every single day you come and you bring it. But nobody's ever going to accuse you of being Babe Ruth or Ozzie Smith. I mean, but it doesn't matter. There's all kinds of, it's like the John Paxson, Steve Kerrs of basketball. They're in their own right, they're way better than anybody we've ever played against, but compared to Oscar Robertson, Will Chamberlain, they're not in the same league either, right? But you can continue to do that. And a farmer was one of those guys. I mean, there's people that had that kind of talent that never made it to the majors. And he wasn't going to be Sandy Koufax, but he was pretty damn good. And he made a career out of it, and he enjoyed it, and good for him.
Yeah, made an all-star team or two.
Yeah, and yet...
You know, on grit, you know, just like a Larry Boa did.
Yeah. And you see that at all levels. I mean, you see people walking into one of the... When I used to go in the early 80s when, you know, I was trading and wasn't doing the show and so forth, I go down for a week for spring training, and I always go watch the minor leaguers. And it was amazing, Kevin, that the people who were walking into the camp for the first time with their, you know, their bags of stuff, and the people you'd see walking out with their bags of stuff. And physically, they all looked the same. You know, I mean, obviously, if one of them would have been, you know, 6'4 and could run like a deer, you'd have picked them out. But none of them were, but they were... You know, some guys are leaving and some guys are coming in and some are going to make it and some aren't. And you wonder, there is such a thing called heart sometimes, or being in the right place at the right time. I mean, Larry Boa obviously he didn't even start in high school, but I mean, he clearly, if he would have landed an organization with five shortstops, he has to get his fanny out of there, right? Because he's never going anywhere. But a lot of it is making sure you get to the right place. I mean, even, you know, we talk about, you know,
some of it's timing, but some of it is, you know, what you're describing is that there are people, and, you know, if I had to sell myself in a job interview, this is exactly what I'd say. I don't give up. And there are some people who just don't give up. Whatever is thrown out. Now, you know, that's not very attractive in an argument. Because, you know, it becomes more about winning and losing than it does about, you know, coming up with any kind of a productive solution. But, you know, for my part, I really have to avoid those people that are constant arguments, because if I don't, then, you know, I'm off the deep end. And so, you know, I just consider it, you know, what I would call toxic people that drive me crazy. But, you know, there is a persistence angle to it, and sooner or later, you know, we're going to plow through this and we're going to get it. That, and when I talk about having to do turnarounds, having to do make things functional, that's a good thing. Is that you just never give up until it's working, and you know you just can't, you know, you don't throw up your hands. It's also a good leadership trait that leaders don't give up. And leaders are optimistic too. That they always think and tell everybody around them and give everybody around them the impression that, you know what, we're going to get through this. Whatever it is, we're going to win.
Well, I mean, it's also being able. That's why I'm not big on the NFL draft, although I like the fact that it's only seven rounds. Because, you know, friend of the show, Pete Najarian, you know, Pete was played at Minnesota, and Pete's big thing. I think Pete was either a hurdler's champ or pretty damn good in high school. So Pete's really fast, and he's not that huge of a guy. You know, he's and without beefing himself up for football, he's 215 on a good day, 220 maybe. And so when he comes out of college, he gets drafted by somebody that plays a 4-3, and everybody's supposed to be a bruiser in the middle spot. You know, if Pete could have found a place where they played a 3-4, for those that don't know, the inside guy on the if you have like a Lawrence Taylor, okay, and he's gonna be a rush end, that guy inside of him is normally a guy who's a pass cover sort of dude, which Pete excelled at. So if he could have found that team, he might have had a you know, an 8-10 year career in the NFL, but he got drafted by somebody. Now the Bears, of course, used to play a 4-3. And the guy in the middle was supposed to be able to take a guard or a center end, a la Butkus, a la Singletary, and shed that kind of a block and still move forward. Well, Pete wasn't that guy. He's not nowhere near as big as Butkus or Singletary, those guys. So a lot of it is landing where you're supposed to land. So you really do. That's why I would like to see more minor league free agency in baseball, Kevin, and so forth. But again, that's, you know, it's a subject for a different day. I'm going to shift gears to Paul Harvey, page 3 here. If you watch some of the market, it's down again this morning, the Russell. Russell's getting beat up pretty good. The Russell we were talking about all week where guys are buying, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of puts for today out of the money. And I've had, you know, all kinds of clients, you know, talk to me. And they're talking about, you know, these stocks and the averages are here. And, you know, the averages will come back to records in 2 years and blah, blah, blah. And I said, just be careful, because the averages someday may come back to records. But you might find PTI in the S&P 500. I mean, I doubt it. But, I mean, there's always going to be an average that comes back. But just be careful here with some of these, especially these oil stocks, and who knows, some of these bank stocks are looking a little wobbly. Not that they don't have enough money, but who knows, well, how tied they are to Deutsche Bank or someplace in Santander. I mean, we're talking about places, are places going to survive? And with the Russell, I think the fact that Russell is really doing worse than the rest of these averages, to a certain extent, Kevin, is, I don't know, if we're pushing May, June, you and I know that no matter what the president and his gang say and Congress says, this money does not get down to a smaller business anywhere near the extent that it does United Airlines or Boeing or somebody. But I'll tell you this, even if you give the airline $50 billion and we're still farting around with 100,000 people in the air in September, that $50 billion is going to be like you know, whatever, peeing in Lake Michigan, right? I mean, this has to end fairly soon, Kevin, or we got real, real trouble. And I don't know, I mean, I'm saying by the end of April, maybe May 15th, maybe pushing Memorial Day. We're still screwing around like this in July with no plan for people that have had the disease to reenter the work source, with no plans whatsoever. We're still trying to figure out whether we should wear masks or not. I think we got real problems. I mean, I don't know how many. I mean, I guess.
Well, I think so, and I'd like to believe that there are people who now have been assigned the task of saying, "Okay, what are we going to do as this winds down?" And you know, how are we going to build some kind of a glide path here? I don't know that that's the case. I wouldn't be surprised if it is the case, and that nobody's really talking about it much, but. But I don't know that's the case. I also wouldn't be surprised if nobody's given it a second thought yet. But, you know, it really is, at some point, we do have to start talking about, okay, this is going to be, we're going to all of a sudden say all clear, or we're going to say partial clear, or whatever it is we're going to say, and how many million people do we have out of work? How are we going to, you know, are they just going to all be called back? I doubt it. Are people going, you know, are consumers going to be spending? Well, not without money in their pockets, they won't. And, you know, how is all of this going to return, and how long is that going to take?
Well, it hasn't taken more than 3-4 days since this bill got passed that companies have put it right in the face of government, saying, we're Macy's. I can't pay 100,000 people. What are you, out of your mind? With nobody in the store? Well, we're going to keep people on benefits as long as we can, but they're not getting paid. What are you, nuts?
And I do appreciate the notion that there are a lot of businesses out there who are saying we'll keep people on, you know, on benefits. We'll do as much as we can for them. But you're right. Are you nuts? Is it feasible that we're going to do this? Even, you know, maybe for a little while. Maybe there's some businesses out there that have enough capital to do that, but you know they're businesses, and you know at some point they're going to start acting like businesses.
Well, they're also, I think, our people in government, especially the higher levels, the three, I can't even begin to think that these are the three people leading us: Pelosi, McConnell, Schumer, and this guy, but do they think the rest of the world?
Well, I'd say the you got five. You have the two Senate leaders, the two House leaders, and the president. Those are the ones that are shaping it. And Speaker Pelosi is busy now. They're getting, you know, they're forming the oversight committee to look into the handling of this. And we have Adam Schiff involved. So I'm sure that'll be a real productive operation.
Well, the idea of giving that kind of money unfettered to a president in the original bill, I don't think the founding fathers ever thought that, even when they had George Washington in the wings. I don't think they ever thought of giving anybody that kind of power. But either way, Kevin, the point being is they're convinced that their money they can just print. That mentality must work its way through. You got to keep your people on medical. With what? My checks bounce. Yours don't, you idiot. Or idiot, whatever. I mean, don't they get it? What can you do?
I think more people get it than you're crediting. I just think they don't want to talk about it.
I think that the they're convinced now that no matter what happens, they can print money and save it. And I'm telling you, Kevin, I've been studying monetary policy for 50 years, and we're coming to the end of that horse. We're going to call them greenbacks again. By the way, you know what where the term greenback came from?
You know what? I did once. I don't now.
You forgot something? You don't forget anything.
Oh, you know, sometimes I do. It just depends on the era where I learned it. There was a time when I was burning up more brain cells than I was developing.
By too much exercise?
That was probably it, yeah.
Anyway, during the Civil War, we went off the gold standard, so which means the dollar was backed by gold, and then we printed dollars that weren't backed by gold, but they were green, so they were called greenback. They were only backed by the green that was on them, right?
Oh, okay. So the color determined.
Yeah, they were called greenbacks because they were like the dollars are green, right? But there was nothing behind them, so they were called greenbacks. What are they backed by? Green. So, you know, these old guys weren't so stupid. But you know, I think we can pull it off right now. I think the Feds. You know, I hate to say this, but I think the Feds. Right, they're up to like, what, $5.7 trillion on the balance sheet. I'm going to say they got to top out at 7. They can't be doing in 22 months own every single U.S. government bond or bill or whatever. We're reaching a point where you wouldn't give Caesar the ability to just print cash and spend it. And yet when we're doing this two-step where we go out and borrow it, give Goldman Sachs the money for the commissions and the front run it, then the Fed comes and buys it the next day. Kevin, even our population is going to figure that out at some point.
Yeah, it's like it would be as if my only asset in the world is my 401k balance, and my only liabilities in the world were my borrowings from the 401k.
Right, or if you had a well, you do have a son and daughter. If you had one, say you had one like AV to like to spend a lot on shoes and stuff, and you would never lend her dough. Right, you would never give her money. Yet every time she borrowed money from me to buy a pair of shoes, you came and paid the debt off for her and bought the note from me. That's essentially what is happening, where I'm the Fed and you're the government. How many people do you think?
Thank you, by the way.
How many people do you think know that? Or that's the way it's actually working.
Well, yes, we have a bigger problem than that. You know, a big problem anyway that people don't really understand civics and the basic, you know, any of that. These should all be lessons that are really baked into a good high school education system, but they're not. So that's a whole different subject. And you know what? If we had time, I'd get into some of the things that are going on in education through all this. But we don't, because Carl's coming on, and I'm looking forward to that.
By the way, out of all the classic stuff I enjoyed, I think I enjoyed the Bulls game the other night when they played Orlando the best. I didn't realize how good of a player Penny Hardaway was. I mean, faded.
Well, and as you look at Orlando, that, you know, young Shaq,
yeah,
and how good he was. You know what? Another revelation from all that is I've forgotten that Luke Longley was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you know, but they really did the three. One thing I will say, I love him as an announcer, Bill Wennington leaning up against Shaq would be like me leaning up against Shaq, even though Bill Wennington was a much better ball player than me. Got Shaq had to weigh by 100 pounds.
And Bill Wennington was not a tiny man.
Oh, God, no.
He wasn't, you know, he was tall, and he wasn't tall and skinny.
But Shaq was just huge.
But compared to Shaq, you know, he was less, he wasn't as athletic, and he wasn't nearly as big.
Well, Shaq hated playing against Rodman. He'd lean into Rodman, and Rodman would back up, and Shaq would almost fall down. Rodman was such a pain to play against. Anyway, SB Futures, hey, we're up 625 here. As that Futures,
hey, we're rolling good.
We're on the roll, and we'll come back with Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, we're back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ausch, he's AV. And the board, SP Futures now up a buck. They were just up six. They went from minus 20 to up six in about a nanosecond. NASDAQ Futures down 750. There's a piece of news out there that we haven't quite got yet that must be filtering about. Do we have Mr. Carl?
You do.
Carl, how are you, buddy?
Well, I'm doing great.
Hey, before we get into some of the other stuff, I know we want to talk about, do you believe this crap about this Luckin Coffee yesterday? You see this?
Oh, yeah. What? It's just the latest in a long line, right?
What are these people doing with a NASDAQ listing?
Well, what is... You know, again, where is the so-called regulation that is supposed to prevent this kind of thing?
It's followed a dollar. Why is Baidu listed?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like this is a new deal, right? I mean, this happens all the time. It's just this one actually managed to get some people's attention, right? Because, you know, big crash in the stock price, and so, oh, look at this. Why does anybody expect anything different out of this sort of part of the world? I guess we'll be non-discriminatory and say this part of the world.
Why... Maybe you can help me with this, because I was going to say it before you came on, but I couldn't think of all four. What, there's only four real things left from the New Deal, correct? One is Social Security.
Right.
One is I don't know, is it the Department of Agriculture? Well, one is for sure the SEC, right?
Right.
And I can't, the other four, I'm being foggy with here, but the other two, but there's two other things that are still around.
Well, I think there isn't the milk, the quota system in dairy production related?
I think so. Something having to do with agriculture and I don't know what the fourth
one. I think it's dairy specifically.
But anyway, one of the things that the SEC changed the world of, I mean, if you ever think that people pump and dump now, before there was an SEC, the idea that, when banks would actually call you in those days to have you buy stock, there was nothing even to send you. There was no, if it was a new stock, there was no prospectus. If it was an old stock, there was no audited financial sheet. Only the bank had the numbers. So you can only only imagine how screwed up were. You could buy it from me. Well, can you tell me anything about the company? No. Do you know anything about the company? Yeah. Well, you want me to buy it from you and you're selling? Yeah. I mean, you know, the logic was, now these guys in China, are these guys audited by, are they audited? Do they have a prospectus that we could audit from this end?
Oh, yeah, sure. You have one. Yeah, we have these auditors over here. I'm sure they're, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
These idiots went out and they had a secondary stock offering, 4.8 million shares at 4.2 million shares in January.
Yeah.
And then the guy comes out today and says, by the way, all the numbers in 2019 are crooked. I mean, how does a coffee shop, when you can see the average person in here spends $5 and there's 50 people in here, there's 300 people in this place for a day, they got 4,000 establishments. How could somebody not be able to estimate the revenue of a coffee shop, for God's sake?
Well.
I don't know. I mean, you see this stuff and you wonder how screwed up, I mean, who approved this extra shares in January at the NASDAQ?
Obviously somebody who got an envelope under the desk.
Well, I hope we're not being that Chicago-ish, but maybe we are.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're Chicago-ish with so many other things these days. You know, look at all the stuff that's going on with COVID.
Yeah.
And the flat-out BS that we're getting there. I mean, I'll just give you one quick example. All of these lockdowns and all of this stuff that's coming out of the federal government right now is based upon this one computer model, which, by the way, the Gates Foundation is responsible for developing. By the way, Fauci is on the board, or either Fauci or Birx. I think it might be Birx. It's got to be Birx, because I think anyway, the corruption of having people on the government payroll sitting on the boards of private foundations that are then providing the core information that politicians and health officials are using to make decisions that destroy a third of the American economy is, we're not talking about something that people ought to go to jail for. We're talking about something that people ought to hang for.
Well, Bill Gates
now,
also.
Now, if these models were accurate, it would be one thing. But let me point out that this model said that as of yesterday, there would be four times as many people in New York hospital beds and ICU beds as is actually the case.
And you have Bill Gates screaming from the highest tree of an 11-week total lockdown. Nobody gets to leave any place for any reason.
Somebody ought to. I won't say that on the air. You know, that we allow as a country this sort of thing to go on. When and you know, hey, listen, you've heard me, you know, raise a stink about the climate models that said that you know the water was going to be lapping up in my living room here in Florida, 10 years ago, right? It hasn't happened. There hasn't been more than a half an inch worth of change in sea level as measured by the dock pilings that are sitting in, you know, buried in the sand out here, out my back door.
Right? Yeah.
So this did not verify, and yet we still have people doing things based upon that and spending money. This is not about spending money. This is about forcibly placing you under house arrest.
Right, yeah.
All right, and you know, look, I get it. If this was SARS, if this was something that, or God forbid, smallpox, okay, yeah. 30% fatality rate or something like this. But you know, here's the interesting thing. Does anybody remember this thing called AIDS?
Yeah.
100% fatality rate. 100%. It was, if you got HIV in the early 1980s, you were dead.
Yep.
There was no maybe about that.
It was a really horrible death on top of it. Not just a regular old death. It was a bad death.
Oh no, it was a really bad way to go.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we were told for, oh my God, forever, there's a vaccine around the corner. We'll fix this. Okay? In the 90s, when I was running my company up there in Chicago, there was still no vaccine. And most of the drugs were still on patent. And one of my nightmare scenarios as a business owner was the impact on my health insurance costs for my staff if one of my staff got it. Because this wasn't something that was reasonable. It was $100,000 a year for the drugs. And they didn't work very well, but you're taking a handful of pills every 4 hours, okay? And most people ended up dying anyway, probably because you couldn't possibly comply with that regime and actually, you know, do it, right? I mean, it was impossible. You'd miss doses. Things were...
Well, plus nowadays, the drugs made you so easier. Sick. A couple of traders had that, and I remember the drugs made them almost as sick as a disease, for God's sake, depending on...
Yeah, there was... Oh, it was absolutely terrible, and yet... These are the same people that today are ignoring the, and yes, it's anecdotal evidence at this point, okay? But there is very solid evidence that if you intervene early with drugs that are 50 plus years old, that we've got a 50-year safety profile on them, and we're still using them, all right? And do they work every time? No, there is no such thing as a drug that works every time. I mean, come on, folks. Get over it. But the reality is that, and this is just another, this is a piece of statistical data out of New York City, okay? 2% of the people who have died in New York City, irrespective of age. Now, this is the other lie that we keep having parroted around. We must do all these things. We absolutely must, because anybody that's older is at risk, and that is not true. 2% of the people who have died in New York City, this is direct data from the coroner's office, did not have one of diabetes, lung disease, cancer, immunodeficiency, heart disease, hypertension, asthma, kidney disease, or GI liver disease, basically cirrhosis. Okay, when you get down to it. All right. Of the people who have died, 1,145 of them that have been classified so far, and it takes them a few days to, you know, to do the review, right, had one or more of those conditions, and 24 had none. And it doesn't matter your age, 75 and older, there have only been 3 people who passed that didn't have one of those conditions.
Yeah, it's
3.
Well, I don't really have an issue with some of the with this way. I look at somehow or another, Carl, and you—I know you—you despise this in me. I think of everything like it's a trade. It's like option strategies. There's a million.
Well, everything is a trade.
There's a million option strategies. Not a million. There's a bunch. And if somebody asks you if they're good or bad, now I go, tell me what you're using them for. Tell me. I mean, there's no good ones or bad ones. There's what there's. You sell premium sometimes when it's incredibly expensive, and you've got the money to do it. You buy premium when it's cheap. And by the way, you know. But I mean, if they would have landed in January, if they would have said, "Hey, wait a minute, these idiots from China sent people over here in December, and as far as we could figure, these planes landed in New York, Chicago, and 5 places, and we're going to trace these people down, and we're going to sequester like their families or something, and we're going to chase this down. And by the way, we have these tests, and as soon as they're okay, we'll let them go." I don't have a problem with quarantining like they're doing now. If you could at that stage, but when you don't know where you are. Our people can't tell you when they're... If you ask Jay Pritzker tomorrow, when are you going to let people go back to work? He has no idea.
Well, and see, that's one of the problems. And then we have another thing that's going on that is evident in the data, and some of it we can do something about, some of it we can't. And this has happened in every city so far that I've been able to get granular data for, county and city level. In every single case, what you see is a very slow acceleration in cases. And then all of a sudden, a huge percentage of the people in the hospitals come up positive. And right after that, the world explodes.
Right.
Now, if that doesn't suggest very strongly that one of the major vectors in this thing is the people working in those hospitals, you got your head screwed on backwards.
Right. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, and the problem is, and look, I'm not blaming the hospital workers as much as I'm blaming procedures. Hospitals are set up to treat people that walk in and have a heart attack. They're not set up to treat people that have an infectious disease. And they never have been. There's a handful of places in this country, for example, that are rated to take Ebola patients, and only a handful of those. Okay, so there's only a few beds in each of those places. And there's a very good reason for that. That kind of model is exactly backwards what our hospitals are set up to do. And so the idea that we can just ignore this, though, is insane. And then the other issue you have, and this one you can't, I mean, that one you can, you know, maybe there's some procedures and things like this. I mean, look, all over social media the last couple of weeks, there's been picture after picture after picture of some hospital worker with a cell that's taking selfies of all these people kitted up in PPE. What happens to the cell phone after that? That thing's just been contaminated.
Right.
What is the first rule in almost any retail establishment? No dang cell phones in the building.
Well, yeah.
Right? So, I mean, we've got these, you know, with all due respect to the people in the healthcare field, you folks are the reason we have an epidemic right now. And it's not your fault. It's the procedures that were developed over the last, you know, 100 years. Nobody's paid attention to this. But the fact of the matter is, that we have taken all of these measures. We've locked down all of, you know, they're talking about, you know, negative 30% GDP prints next quarter. All right. Insane. We're going to end up with 35%, according to the CBO, which is always optimistic because of the way their rules are set up on evaluations. We're going to see a 28% annualized decline in second quarter. 28%. That's worse than the Depression.
Yep.
That is the worst annualized number since 1920, since the Depression of 2021, which no one calls a depression.
Well, Carl, the individual decisions, I mean, yesterday, I mean, obviously I've been reading the stuff you sent, I've been reading stuff everybody sends, and now they decide there's clamor to let, you know, 30 or 40% of the people out of the jails.
Right, that's even worse.
Well, you know, my logic I mentioned earlier is, okay, now if somebody's in there for, you know, that there's no bond court for 6 weeks and it's a misdemeanor, I don't have any problem letting somebody out. But for God's sake, Carl, you've got to test that person. If he's positive, you don't send him home to his family, if he has a family. The first thing you have to do is say, Well, after the test, the second thing, can't have two first things. By the way, where are you going? If he says I'm Bill Gates and I'm going to one of my houses by myself for 2 weeks, let him go. If he says I don't even have a home, I'm going to go live on the street. Well, that's not a good idea if he's positive. It's probably not a good idea if he's negative. You have to have some idea of what you're doing here. You don't just make these decisions in a vacuum.
Well, here's the other thing that goes along with that. Okay, so we're going to do all of these things. Okay. And that's the other, that brings up the other vector. This one I don't think we can do anything about. We can change procedures, policies, and the way that hospitals operate. The problem is you're never going to do it in enough time to matter. Because again, it's a inculcation and training and procedures thing. You can't do this in a week. Right? It's not going to happen across the number of people that work in that industry. It's just not. And then the other issue though is, You take a look at the other place where gross overrepresentation is, and it's police officers. All right, New York City has a something like a 4% of their force is positive. Now that's a crazy overrepresentation, and they've got 17% of their force out sick now.
How many people?
Who knows how many of those people are positive and haven't been tested?
Well, yesterday morning we walk in at crack of dawn here for the show. And downstairs, there's six policemen talking to the fire guy downstairs, and engine company number one, and they couldn't have been 2 feet apart.
How do you stop that? Because how does a police officer do his or her job and not interact with people at close range?
But I'm saying, I guess, let's take it from the top here, Carl, a little bit. Let's say a normal year, if there's such a thing. I mean, I've gone to the doctor where I didn't go there for a cold. I went there for my normal checkup, and I might have had a cold. And all of a sudden, I'm coughing and he's coughing. He goes, yeah, I got the damn cold too. I mean, if it's cold or flu, I have a feeling if it was smallpox, the doctor would, be more concerned. And I know when my mom had cancer and she was doing chemo and she got a case of the shingles. Well, there were about three or four of the nurses in this particular place that were pregnant. They got out of there like smoke coming out of their behinds.
Well,
yeah. I mean, it's that you the last thing you want is a chickenpox vaccine on top of somebody who's pregnant. I mean, so what I'm saying is we're not normally set up. There's as much criticism as, you know, we drop on our bureaucracy. I don't know that I'm no what do you call it, germ epidemiologist, whatever the name is. I don't know of a disease where 50% of the people who have it have virtually no symptoms, and yet it's pretty damn deadly to other people. I mean, and by the way, you're most contagious before you even know you have it. I mean, I don't know if I can.
Well, you can't stop a disease that spreads like that. That's one of the scams that we have, is that we have this idea that if we just, you know, we just put up with this stuff. Okay, we don't all stand up and say, "Blank you, we're going back to work. You're not stopping us, and if you try, you know, when in the course of human events is going to be the answer."
Yep.
Okay? And it is all about people being willing to live in fear. But the reality of it is this: we have been trying for forever to get rid of the flu and to get rid of colds. Okay? Now this is a much more severe thing, especially if you happen to have any one of a number of very serious underlying conditions. Heck, essentially all of the things that are on that report from New York, one of them is on one of my family's death certificates somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, basically all of them. Those things kill people all the time, with or without a bug.
Right.
And so, I mean, you know, that's just the reality of it. But the problem we have here is that you look at how this thing spreads, and when this started, I said the big problem here is that they found this in feces, and fecal oral is amazingly contagious. It is, you would not believe how easy it is to spread that, and it's almost impossible to stop when you have something that spreads prior to people knowing that they have it. And so you say, we'll isolate and quarantine all the healthcare workers that get sick. Well, if you do that, you have no doctors and no nurses, and therefore you have no hospital, and the entire thing collapses around your ears. So then you say, well, we'll test anybody that's symptomatic. Okay, what do you do about the fact that nurse just spread the love to 400 people in the 3 days between when she got it and when she had symptoms.
Well, you're less, according to what I've read, you're less contagious the second you have symptoms than you were the day before.
Yeah, and see, it's the same thing, though, with the flu, and one of the reasons we can't get rid of the flu is because the peak contagion is just before you actually get the fever and feel like crap, okay? So there is no way we are ever going to be able to trace and isolate everybody who has this thing. It would be nice if we could, but what we found out when Singapore had their outbreak, the way they got it under control is by stopping the transmission in their hospitals. And they were able to do it without putting everybody in moon suits. And the simple reality of it was that one of the big things that came out of that was wash your blankety-blanking hands before and after contact with any person or potentially contaminated surface. And of course, they don't have the problem of everybody running around with a cell phone in their pocket in the hospital.
At some point here, I don't know how we're ever going to get. I think we're probably up to, you know, pick a number, 100,000 people here that already they had it and they're done with it. By the way, I keep getting calls from people, Carl. People think they might have had it in December. Are they just going squirrely, or is that possible?
Well, it is possible. My base case is that this thing was over here in the United States in October, November. The math says that that's the case. We keep seeing the same pattern, which is, you know, the geometric series with an R-naught of 3 should go 1, 3, 9, 27, 81, blah, blah, blah. And that's what scares everybody because, you know, that number gets really big really fast, right? The thing is that that's not the pattern we keep seeing. We see it everywhere I have granular enough data that I can actually look at areas. What you see is like 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 40. Okay, and then shortly after that, a nuclear bomb goes off, and that is the reason that I'm absolutely certain that there is a vector that's being ignored here. And then the other thing is, you've got about a 5-day generation time, so about 5 days between when you get it and when you end up giving it to everybody else that you're going to give it to. And that data is obvious from looking at the step functions that are in the graphs. And we have now been locked down for about 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, okay? So we're just getting into the fourth generation period since they imposed this, and they've cut the average person's social interactions in society by about 90%. And anybody that is in a service industry and has contact with hundreds of people, yours have been cut by 99%.
Right.
And yet all we're seeing in the change in this R-naught is about 0.4, from a 2.7 to 3.0. And the thing that's scary is this is consistent between places like New York and the country as a whole. So if you look at that, you say, well, okay, the data says that casual transmission between the average Joe on the street is not the primary way this thing spreads. Yes, it's a factor, and all of these lockdowns have depressed that. However, number one, they haven't depressed it enough, which means that Fauci and his merry little band and these lockdowns and these travel bans and everything else, not only are they not doing what he said they were going to do, they can't and never will. And we are ignoring wherever the biggest transmission vectors are because we haven't found them or for political reasons, we're not talking about them. And that means that according to their own standards, this is never going to be released. And then you have the other problem, which is that if you sit down with Excel and you graph these sequences out, and let's say you go 50 days, which is about what we're going to end up with this, you know, this lie that was 15 days of slow spread, now it's 45. You go 50 days, and what you've done is you've traded 50 days worth of lockdown for 15 days worth of expansion if you just left it alone. And as soon as you drop them, it goes right back to where it was.
How do you
and
ever,
the same thing happens.
Just in terms of the pure numbers, when you start, like, they're just starting a couple of drive-through testing places here in Illinois.
Now, yeah.
All right, so if you go from testing only people that are sick a week ago, and you test 3,000 people a day, and now we're going to test 20,000 people a day, how do the numbers not go up? I mean, if I'm right and this thing was here a long time ago, and it's way further through society than we think it was, or is, and we have a lot of people that have already gotten over it. How do the numbers ever get any good? Because clearly, the more people you test, the more people are going to have it.
Well, you don't. Number one, and then there's the second problem that you have with this is, which is very serious, which is that what you really need to know where we are is an antibody test, basically a test for seroconversion. Such a test exists. You cannot, however, go to a Walgreens and buy one because the FDA refuses to approve it for home use. There's no reason for that. It's no more complicated than what a diabetic does every day. Stick your finger, a little bit of blood, a reagent, put it on the pad. 10 minutes later, it's like a pregnancy test. It either comes over the bar or it doesn't. And I know for a fact that I am negative, okay, which means I've not been exposed to it and I haven't built antibodies. But these do exist, and the thing is, you have to have some way to get them to people, and we have to run large-scale surveys of people who are not apparently sick. We will not know how many people have had this thing and recovered from it without showing any symptoms or showing very minimal symptoms until we do those surveys. These people are not doing them on purpose.
You're the only person. Well, we're going to go to break. We'll pick this up right after. S&P Futures now down 20, where we were before we jumped up. We'll come back. We'll have the numbers. We have the numbers right now. Give us a second here, AV. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about them, because they'll give Carl a chance. Down 700,000. Wow, with a March 12th date of when they did these surveys? That's massive. We'll come back. We'll talk about it.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. He's Mr. Carl Denninger from MarketTicker.org. By the way, some very good articles on there. A lot of stuff we're talking about. SP futures down 750. Now, they were just down 20, and they went up 1, and now we're down 850. We're all over the place after this. 701,000 people in March. Now, I heard earlier in the weigh-in from some so-called expert that the date that they do the survey on is March 12th. It can't be March 12th because that was before this started. Or else we're really in deep doo-doo. But they've got the unemployment rate at 4.4%. We'll go through those numbers in a second. Dow's down 130 over in Europe. We've got the DAX up 2, call that flat. FTSE down 54, that's a whole percent. CAC-Iran down 36, that's 0.9%. Over in Asia, got the Nikkei was up 1, call that flat. Shanghai down 16.6%. Hang Seng down 43, that's 0.2%. Bonds, 0.598, call that 0.6. Bund minus 0.44, Japan positive 0.0003. Oil up again, another $1.91 to 27.23. Still looks low, but it's a lot better than, if you're doing oil, it's a lot better than 20. Because if you're in some of these places where your basis risk is 10 bucks, at least now you're getting 17 a barrel versus like, 8 or 9. That wouldn't have been too good. Brent 34.07, natural gas 154, RBOB gas. All the way back to 74 cents from 49 cents a few days ago. We got gold now up $1.20 to 16.38. Silver down 7 cents. AV, what do you guys, traffic weather?
Good morning, friends. It's 46 degrees currently in Chicago. Partially cloudy day with a few peaks of sun expected today with the temperatures in the 60s away from the lake, around 57 by the lake. The lowest is 41. And we have occasional showers expected overnight that will give way to slightly cooler conditions Saturdays and Sunday. Stormy conditions are possible Monday and Tuesday, especially after dark. Sunny day in Phoenix, the highest is 85 and the lowest 58. Also, the traffic is pretty clear besides delays on Dan Ryan outbound in the express lanes approaching the Chicago Skyway where a multi-vehicle crash still blocks the two right lanes. Slowdown starts at 63rd. Use the local lanes instead to avoid the delays. Chief?
Carl, just to finish my thought real quick, and then we'll get into these numbers. I don't see how, and I'm not going to say if I'm Donald Trump, but if I'm Pritzker or Lori Lightfoot or any of these people, how do I not say, damn it, I got to know where I am on this thing. You get in there, give me a random number. Get your random number table out. I guess we generate those on computers. I'm showing my age. I want a test of 1,000 people here in the Cook County area, maybe 1,000 people downstate. You 25 idiots, get in your cars. I'm going to give you the names and the address of these people. I'm going to give you two tests. One is, do you have it? And one, did you have it? And you've got to find that person. I want to know what I'm dealing with. If I don't know what I'm dealing
A thousand wouldn't be big enough to get a statistical. I mean, it would give you a decent idea, but you need a little bigger than that. But you know what? These guys, before they did all of this stuff, before they started locking everything down, okay, they could have sent a crew out with 1,500 or 2,000 of these tests into major metropolitan areas, you know, like Chicago, okay. And grabbed random people on the street. First level screening is simply, do you have a fever? If you are, you're excluded. Otherwise, nope, here, stick your finger in here. Get one finger stick, we're done. And the thing is, you don't need identifying information, okay? This thing can be completely anonymous, because you're not trying to find out who's got it, you're trying to find out how many people have got it. And the swab up the nose thing is actually extremely nasty. I mean, now there's a newer one that you don't have to shove it all the way up into your brain, basically. But the old test was, not only that, it was very slow to run it. The finger stick thing, however, is 10 minutes and very fast, and I mean, it's no more painful than what a diabetic puts up with 10 times a day. So it's no big deal. They didn't do these surveys, so they have no clue where they are. They're flying blind. But out of the numbers we just got, okay, because it took me a couple minutes to plug it in, but hey, that's what the commercial breaks are for, right?
Right.
So the establishment survey that week closed on the 12th. All right, so that's negative 701 that you saw from the establishment survey was on the 12th. 2 days later, the 14th, is the day that the household survey closed. All right, 2 days later. Do you know what that number is?
I got it down 3 million.
Negative 2.85.
All right, you're trying to be exact on me. By the way,
well, I got that. Well, I mean, you know, I plugged it into my worksheet, the one that I run every month. Neg 2850, and here's the other bad news, is that we also had 2 million people leave the labor force.
I got 1.6 million. Hey, I'm going to push back on one. Our training is slightly different. You want to go grab people on Michigan Avenue. Let me just come back at you a little bit. So once in a while, I can't always be the receiver here. If the number was random, which is a
right.
Massive if you could actually pull that off, you could do a survey with 50 people. It'd be worthwhile if you could find the right 50 people. But how do you do
that? Well, no, you can't, because it's the positive rate that is important, okay? And that's why this is a big deal. The way geometric series work, you do not have a substantial percentage of the population that is going to be positive until right at the end. All right?
Right.
So when you look at how this ends up working out, when you get to the point that you have 3 or 4% of the people that have seroconverted and they've had this thing, you are a couple of turns away from having herd immunity, and it's over.
Do you think, Carl, that the only thing I know about this is I read Tom Clancy's book. Do you think that there's a chance that the first person who came here from China and gave it to somebody, that as we wound our way through, that the virus is weakening at all?
Very unlikely. It happens all the time. And one of the things that everyone loves to point at is SARS, which, of course, they clamped down on really hard. That was a really bad one. That killed 15% of the people who got it. And half of those over 65. You want to talk about a horrific thing.
Had SARS, you weren't working. But at any age, if you had SARS, you weren't working around with it. You got yourself to a doctor.
Well, yeah, and see, that's the thing. The other thing is, it wasn't very contagious until you were very obviously sick. Okay, and then it was. So SARS, though, underwent a mutation very early in its genealogical life that made it much more deadly, and it also changed its infectiousness profile substantially. So essentially, it hit you like a hammer, and that was when you became most contagious, but it was very obvious you were ill. And so it was fairly easy to track down all the people who had it and get them out of the general population, because nobody would want to go anywhere with that bad. This is an entirely different thing. But one of the things that's a little disturbing about this, or all the people who think we're going to beat this or it's going to go away or whatever, is that there have been about 100 strains that have been sequenced so far. And the genome on this virus is extremely stable. It is changing. It always does. That's just the way viruses are. But in terms of the characteristics, it's very, very stable. So the odds are that's not going to happen with this one. And the odds also are that no matter what sort of mitigation factors we take, and people need to hear this and understand it, I don't care how long you hold these lockdown measures, there's never been a successful durable immunity coronavirus vaccine. Fine. We have only eradicated two viruses in the history of man. One of them is smallpox. We did that through a vaccine. There is not likely to be a vaccine ever There certainly will not be one for the next 18 to 24 months. And no matter how long you hold these measures, when you release them, unless you can manage to isolate and stop every single person that has it, which anywhere in the world, which is not going to happen either, it's going to come back.
Just out of curiosity, why do you say that smallpox was a vaccine? It was another disease. It was cowpox.
Well, yeah, that's what was used to inoculate people.
But it wasn't something we dreamed up in a lab.
Oh no, but the thing is that the only way we stopped it, you know, we did the same sort of things with smallpox outbreaks where we locked down cities and we quarantined people and we did, you know, all kinds of stuff like we're doing now. But even though we did all those things, every time we released them, it came back. Every single time.
Right.
And the only way it stopped was they actually forcibly vaccinated people with the cowpox stuff.
Well, they
actually forced people to take the shots.
But you could also, by the way, they weren't shots because I remember having them.
That was kind of a weird.
they put a bubble on your arm and then they took a needle and shoved it under the skin.
Yeah, it was a subcutaneous. Well, it was an injection, but it was subcutaneous, not like you think of it as a shot.
You know, with smallpox, though, you can give somebody, if somebody gets it, and you know they have it, if you give them the vaccination within a couple of days and they get it, it still knocks it out, which is weird.
Yeah, what people have to understand is that's the only virus we've ever eradicated from the planet.
Well, one. Isn't polio a virus?
Polio's not gone, believe it or not.
Well, but I mean, it's smallpox probably isn't gone either.
No, smallpox is actually gone. But polio, you know, there's an interesting thing about polio. Polio, there's two forms of polio. There's the oral vaccine and then the injected one, right?
No, I don't. You got a polio shot, right. And you had the one was live and one was not.
Correct. The oral one is live and attenuated. Okay, and that's the one that I got when I was a kid. Now, when my daughter was a little kid, they gave her the shot. And they still use the oral one in developing countries. And the reason is that if you get the injected one, the injected vaccine, you are immune. However, if you get exposed to the virus, it is still able to be excreted in your feces. And so somebody else who manages to come in contact with that hasn't been immunized gets polio.
Well, I'm a little older than you. We got the shot.
Even though you don't get sick.
We got the shots first and then, and even though we had the shots, whenever they came to the schools and gave you the sugar cube, then you took it anyway.
Right. But that's the reason they did it, because even though you had had the shot and you would not get polio, you could still pass it on to other people that weren't vaccinated.
Oh, all right. All right, Kyle, we got to
that's the reason that they did the two-phase thing.
All right, let me ask, I'm going to ask you these questions as every man, because you're the expert. So please go in the order that I'm going to give you. This is the way some dumb might ask. How do we lose 1.6 million people out of the workforce? Where'd they go?
Well, good question. But they're gone, according to this.
Because they're not in school. They all got kicked out of school. I've got 158,759 employed last month and 155,772 this month. So it's like 2,000,008 something-something, just like you have.
Yeah, I'm running off unadjusted because I always do. Right. But, yeah, it's 2,850. Yeah.
I've got 1,000,008 people. Enter the we don't know what the hell they're doing column, and I got 1,000,004
right.
Entering the unemployed column. Is that because other people haven't signed up yet?
Well, yeah, and again, this data straddled when they first started the lockdowns. Okay, they were just starting to actually force closed bars and other establishments and everything else. Next month, it. Welcome to the depression, because if this data is in any way accurate, and God knows with the noise in this, because they straddled the survey week, but if this is anywhere close to accurate, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a 10 to 15 million print next month.
Well,
I mean, if we don't stop this madness, the damage that this is going to do economically, it'll be 10 years before we recover.
Well,
to mention that you scared the living blankety blank out of everybody. So even if they opened up the bars tomorrow, would you go?
No.
Well, see, that's a problem, right?
You know
because
what?
How do you recover if everyone thinks that everybody else is trying to kill them?
Two questions. I mean, because we've been we've been dancing for 2 or 3 weeks around this, all right? And the bottom line comes, you're talking about the hospitals, you know, and granted, in the last 3-4 weeks, especially here in Illinois, Carl, I've seen incredible movement. I mean, I'm not going to pin nothing but bad things on Jay Pritzker and those guys. I mean, they now have done what they should have done maybe either in December or should have been planning to do since 9/11. They've got McCormick Place staged. They've got hotels that are empty anyway for people who either don't have it, can stand there, or I'm assuming they have a couple that if you do have it, you can hang there and stay out of society. I mean, they're starting to do the things that, but it, if the hospitals are not full, and they can handle it, it's, and if you don't think that you can possibly, say the horse is so far out of the barn, that it is essentially the common cold, at some point do you just say, we're going to start going back to work in stages and we're just going to ride it out? I mean, nobody want, these guys, I think, that may end up being, and I hope to God not, that may end up being the proper decision, but I don't see these guys after they it's like somebody with a trade, that now it's a trade that was a great trade, you got to keep it forever. They're now become prisoners to their former decisions, which has got me very worried.
Yeah, and but you know what? We, the people in this country, we need to stop this, and we need to stop it now. Because here's the thing. The only way you're going to deal with this, given the leakage that we're getting out of the healthcare system, and I'm going to get hate mail for this. I've been getting it for the last week and a half. I've said the only way you do this is that anybody that is COVID positive has to go to a dedicated facility, has nobody in it other than people that are COVID positive.
Exactly right.
If you're a healthcare worker and you are working in that facility and you are not seroconverted, you do not have antibodies, which means you are potentially able to be infected, you are isolated on that facility and you can't leave.
Right. I'm absolutely
and
right.
And that's the tuberculosis sanitarium model, and it's the only way we're going to contain this, because if we don't do that, then you just have to accept. And I understand people say, well, you know, doctors and nurses won't put up. Okay, fine. That's a decision. But if that's the decision, then you just have to let this thing go, and you have to take whatever comes and triage so that we don't lose more people than we have to lose.
But 14,
there's no other option.
But 14 days from now, and it could have been now if you did it 14 days ago, those people are good to go.
Well, but the thing is, you have to, I mean, we have to accept, look, everybody that's listening to this has to accept, you're going to get this thing. There's nothing we can do about it.
I mean, if you take two people on the beach, like you're saying, and you say, okay, you test them both, neither one of them got it. All right, go home, will you, or do something. If one of them has it, you say, well, keep away from the other guy, will you? If they both have it, and one guy says, I got an apartment, and the other guy says, I'm going home to my family, you say, no, sleep on the other guy's sofa for 2 weeks.
Right.
I mean, this is common sense, Carl, and we're not doing it.
I understand, but look, we won't do it, okay? Because at the end of the day, unless you isolate everybody that is dealing with this until and unless they prove that they have seroconverted and they're immune, then you cannot stop this if there is a vector within the healthcare system. It's impossible. And what we are doing right now with locking the economy down and destroying 30% of all economic output, folks, you need to understand what's going to happen here. You do this, you destroy the tax base, you destroy the value of commercial property, residential will be behind it, you're going to lock up all of the markets that depend on this. Most business interruption insurance does not cover this because there's an explicit exclusion for pandemics and epidemics in that.
Stop, I was going to ask you that today, because yesterday on the news, Billy Goat Tavern said, where's my insurance? And they said, no friggin' way.
That's right, and that's the problem. There is no, it is explicitly in the named exclusions, along with civil action, because it's considered an act of war or an act of God, okay? It is an excluded peril. There's nothing, and in some states, it's not even legal to write business interruption insurance that have those as included perils, even if you're willing to pay for it, which would be ridiculously expensive. And so, as a result, all the people that think that you know, the Fed's going to come to the rescue, the government's going to come to the rescue, oh, my God, we're all safe. Listen, you're going to get your $1,200. You're going to get your unemployment bump up, whatever. But your employer is gone. The businesses that have been ruined by this, if we do not stop this now, within the next week, they are destroyed.
Well, the next week,
it's over.
In the next week, what would you do? Try and let people who have had it already come back to work? Would you let everybody come back to
work? No. What you do is you tell people this. You say, look, here are the list of things that we know that make you very likely to die if you get this thing. If you have one of these things, you stay at home, you self-isolate. And you throw anybody out of the house that won't stay in there with you. Okay.
Yeah.
You have, you know, Walmart or whatever, do your grocery thing to the curb. You pull up in the in front of the store. They put the bags in the back of your car, right? You go home. And that's it. And everybody else goes back to work. Because if you stop those people from showing up in the hospital with this, there is no overload. There is no risk. Yes, some people are going to get sick. Yes, everybody's going to get sick. And you're just going to have to deal with that. And then those people need to think, those people that are at high risk, they need to think about whether or not they want to try to use prophylaxis using this hydroxychloroquine, right, which may or may not work. We don't know. But we need to make this a matter of individual choice. And then we can at least, we're still going to have a terrible economic impact. There's going to have a whole bunch of people that can't go back to work. Okay, I mean, they're high risk, they're self-isolated. But you at least have the tax base that is maintained. And you know how you pay for all those public hospitals?
Yeah.
What do you do if you destroy this tax base? How long is it before the hospital collapses and then you have a heart attack and die?
Well, the good thing, Carol, is that we've had the world's greatest economy ever in the history of the man, or maybe even the galaxy, so we had a huge surplus built up.
Yeah, right. Okay, when we were running trillion-dollar deficits, right?
Yeah, I mean, the idea, this is the whole point. You know, it's funny, you listen to people, they talk about how if you run the government, ran a family like you run the government, it'd be totally screwed up. And yet, look at it, Carl, in a lot of ways, a family is run like the government, quote, should be run. I mean, everybody knows that in times of strife, the government has way more services to perform than in times of plenty. I'll use the term, the biblical term, but in times of plenty. Yet the thing we're missing is a family. If you have a family, you got a wife, and you've got three kids, and you say, all right, looks to me like they're going to college 15 years from now, you're gonna try and build up a surplus,
right,
going into those 10 years or 8 years they're all in college. And oh, by the way, you're gonna run a serious deficit for those years. Some you're going to cover by surplus, some probably with some loans for somebody. You know, and then at the end of the day, when they're gone, you're going to work down the loans and you're going to get back in the surplus, hopefully. But the problem with the government is no matter what, there's never a surplus. Everybody says something smart once in a while, even me, Carol. Dr. Jay and I were, I don't know who the hell, I think Rod Blagojevich was the governor or something. So we're driving to work one morning, we're doing the show from 5 to 6 on the Score. And all of a sudden they start talking about the unemployment rate was this and the surplus was this. Bill Clinton might have been president. And I said, you know, John, in Illinois, I said, do you see the problem? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, do you think it's ever going to get any better than this? He goes, I don't see how it ever could. I said, we got a deficit now. What are we going to do when things get bad? He goes, man, I never thought of that. I wish you wouldn't have said that. He says to me, we've had some really good times in our lifetime, and when did we ever have a surplus? I honestly believe that the only reason we had a surplus under Clinton was because how bleeped up the IRS is. Where people?
Oh no, there was no surplus under Clinton.
Well, I'm going to say, even if
there wasn't. That was a lie. He stole the Social Security surplus.
Well, if there was, I'm going to say a lot of it had to do with if you bought a .com stock at 1 and you sold it at 200. You had to pay tax on the whole 200. The next guy bought it at 200 and sold it at 1. He could only take off $3,000 a year.
Right, right. But the reality, I mean, the capital gains was, yeah, during those years, those receipts were very large. By the way, do you know what do you think is going to happen to capital gains receipts this year?
Not so good.
Not so good, right? What do you think is going to happen to corporate tax receipts?
Not so good. What do you think?
What do you think is going to happen to personal tax receipts?
Well, they're going to be horrible.
So what is this going to do to the balance of payments?
Let me ask you this. Out of this whole mess, out of 1,400 pages, why is it so sacred to have the only capital gains deduction on regular income to be $3,000? I said this, I was on somebody's show. And I'll say
the reason for that's obvious. If you let people take losses, and every time there's on a ratable basis against income, every time there's a downturn, then it instantaneously hits federal tax receipts.
Yeah, but I'm not saying it should be $40 million, but Carl, it's the same number as when I got to the market. The market was 800.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's the reason they do it, because what it does is it forces you to pay taxes on losses.
But even if you want to just screw everybody totally, it still should be from 1980. It ought to be like 30. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it should be.
Well, I understand, but the reason they do it is, by the way. That is not true on your 1120 on your corporate return.
Right.
The look back on business losses is just dollar for dollar.
Well, business losses are ordinary to the business.
Right.
But I mean, if you would have bought Schlumberger 1,000 shares at 78 and puked it out at 15, that's $63,000. You better live for 21 years.
Yeah.
That's a little harsh.
Yeah. Well, I know, and you know what? They're not going to change it because the budgetary impact would be immense. But I look at what we have right here, and if this data does not cause anybody that cares about whether or not this economy recovers for the next 10 years, if we keep doing what we're doing right now, in terms of all this stuff that the scolds and the so-called modelers and the so-called experts and everything else, if we keep doing what we're doing right now, you're going to print a number that's probably going to be north of 15 million.
What is, we only have 40 seconds. What is Bill Gates and Ackman's angle by wanting to get everybody shut down for a quarter? Do they want to
Ackman made over $2 billion shorting things into the middle of the decline that he told CNBC that everybody had to be shut down.
Yeah. I mean, why do we let these people on TV?
Well, why aren't these people in jail? I thought insider trading and market manipulation was illegal.
No, not even if you're a senator, you have a blind.
I know, especially if you're a senator, right?
Unbelievable. Carl, thank you very much. Good stuff as usual. I don't think it'll be a month before I have you back. Too much information. S&P futures now down 6, NASDAQ futures down 26. Back Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.